We're looking forward to having you here with the Youth Symphony. I guess I'd start out asking how important it is to work with young people, to sort of work with this next generation.
Oh, are you kidding? You're kidding. It's the only thing worthwhile doing, because these are the people that are not only carrying the torch, but they're burning to carry the torch, which is the most exciting thing, is playing with young people and feeling the energy that, I have to say, I think I had when I was their age. But as you progress and come against the various obstacles, and also just the realities of what it takes to reach audiences, you still believe in everything, but you don't have that unbridled feeling of, I've got it inside my heart, and the message is very clear, and I'm going to bring it. that's the feeling you get from kids, but not really kids. Anybody who gets into music has to start, early enough to really actually be mature in the decision, because it takes so much discipline. So even though you can say youth orchestra or the kids or whatever, they're deep in their devotion to the art, and in order to get into the San Antonio Youth Orchestra, I have a feeling they have to jump a lot of hurdles and leap tall buildings and single band and all kinds of things in order to play with their another thing I remember about being sort of that age is the great spirit of finding your brothers and sisters, sort of your fellow the people that you want to be associated with in sort of an idealistic way for your life. I tell people that, some of the kids sometimes, that if you can call yourself a musician, you can consider yourself very, very honored person to have that responsibility and that wonderful joy of presenting, what you really believe in to others, and letting them in on the secret of music.
They're infectious. I went to China with these guys just a couple of years ago, and it's a real delight. So we are big fans of Troy Peters around here for good stuff. So it's an American program that he set up, and I think maybe the first great American opera, and one of the greatest, is Porgy and Bess. How fun is it to have these arrangements for clarinet and orchestra?
Well, it's terrific. I mean, I think actually my first awareness of the Porgy and Bess is Miles Gil Evans' collaboration, Miles Davis Gil Evans, and that was a very unusual angle from which to come into Porgy and Bess, because it was all instrumental. I mean, Miles was the voice, and when I heard him play things like Summertime just a different, I hadn't thought about the words at all. And then when I decided to have arranged the music from Porgy and Bess, I started thinking more about the words, and I realized that one of the great things a clarinet can do is kind of emulate that attention to the enunciation of the feelings in words, the tone of the clarinet, and the way it can articulate gives it the possibility of sending those words through tone and giving them extra meaning. So I I've been very lucky to have such great music arranged. In this case, though, most of the Porgy and Bess music is simply the music from the opera with me playing the role of Bess or Porgy or Sportin' Life. And the orchestration is pretty much the one that is in the opera.
And that's good for the kids, yeah. You know. That's so good for the kids to play that sort of thing. Well, the other, I mean, if we were to look at the first half of the century, the 20th century, and say, you know, Gershwin and Porgy and Bess, such a big thing in the opera world and for American music. You look at the second half, and early on there, Leonard Bernstein writes this great, you know, takes Shakespeare and puts it in for sort of modern setting here, and we have racial conflicts and all sorts of things here. Again, this is probably souped up a little bit for the clarinet. I'm looking forward to hearing these variants.
Well, it is, I guess, I don't know, souped up, but it's definitely the friend of mine who did this arrangement, Frank Bennett. We went to school together at Yale, and he went on to get a doctorate and then went to the West Coast and sort of made his life in the movie industry and writing for orchestras and arranging the dreams of sort of would-be composers and so forth in Hollywood and bringing them to a reality with his own gift for orchestration. So when I first told him I wanted to have West Side, he said, "Oh man, you know that's trying to fill some big shoes." But you know, I learned that actually Leonard Bernstein himself had a lot of his ideas and melodies and harmonies fleshed out and rethought by Sid Raymond, who was his sort of amanuensis or the guy who really was close to Leonard Bernstein and then created the orchestrations quite a bit. And so having Frank Bennett as my friend, he knows what I can do on the clarinet and what I can't do on the clarinet, and gave that suite a kind of swing, which I really enjoy, but also, you know, touching, because you know, when I first saw the movie West Side Story, I didn't get to see the play at the beginning of the Broadway show, but it didn't dawn on me that this is Romeo and Juliet or a kind of feeling of that. And even the, I have to say, I was just a little kid, and I don't know, the race thing didn't pick up on any of that stuff. Now, of course, I realize how deep and many levels the work is, and it's much more rewarding. I suppose the people in the, all the young gals and guys who are going to play their heart out for this stuff will feel it sort of through the music, maybe then through the intellectual part of how what this music represents.
On top of all of these sort of layers, it's just downright entertaining and you know, great rhythms. Who knows if it's, you know, talking about Puerto Rico versus America, but the whole combination and, you know, splitting up the threes are pretty hip.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've played this quite a few times with what I say adult orchestras and youth orchestras. And I have to confess, I'm sort of more satisfied playing with the youth orchestras because it feels to me like Bernstein's creation was directly written for the youth, for the optimism and the heartbreaking aspect of a young person struggling to be heard, to show their feelings and to connect in a very, very deep way with another person. And I think in this music that comes true. And I sometimes I listen to some of the soloists in the orchestra, the oboist or the flutist or French horns or solo violin, sometimes when they have little sections, I just feel like, wow, this is their music. This is like their music.
I'm such a big fan of all the recordings and the performances. I've had a chance to see you in Wichita, and I think maybe out at Brevard and different places growing up. And excited to have you here in San Antonio. I guess I'm kind of curious. I might end with asking how much of a sort of clarinet guy do you look for different barrels and bells and are constantly looking at mouthpieces? Are you one of these guys that really works into that, or if you found what you want and that's it?
Yeah, I'm not one of those guys. I feel like where the sound comes from and where the music comes from is from the person inside. And yeah, you've got to have your reed and your mouthpiece and your barrel and your bells and your whistles and so on, but all of that doesn't amount to much if it's not backed up by breath that comes from the soul. That's what my usual thing I say to young people, and when they're asking me about the, oh, what reed do you play, and so on. But the ironic thing is, I remember the first time I came to Benny Goodman's apartment, penthouse apartment, and I was, you know, so nervous and so thinking about, my God, if my father were alive, he would, you know, finally think I'd made it, you know, just to be with Benny. And I didn't know what the agenda was going to be, and we sat around for a little bit, and he wanted to talk about the clarinet, just like every other. He was, you know, my God, Benny Goodman, he's a clarinet player. You know, I mean, he's God of the clarinet, and he's a legend in his own time, and he's commissioned people like Stravinsky and Copland and Bartok to write great music for the instrument and everything. But he wanted to know, yeah, so what kind of reed do you use? What's your ligature? I said, holy smokes, this is exactly the clarinet lingo here, you know. Even Benny Goodman still thought about, this is an interesting mouthpiece, and you got another copy like this.
Well, we're looking forward. I bet you'll get some of those questions probably at the masterclass. But as violinists always get asked about their violin and bow, I couldn't resist asking Richard Stoltzman a little bit about his clarinet.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. But I, on the other hand, don't you agree with me? I remember the famous story Isaac Stern told about some great violinist who had been, people came backstage raving about the sound of his violin. It was so great, you know, and he opened up the case and put his ear and said, that's funny, I don't hear anything, actually.
Right. Yeah, there's the story. Someone has this great meal and says, oh, that was wonderful, can I see your stove? Right. This is delicious.
Okay, can I use that?
Absolutely.
I've never heard that before. I love it. I love that. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to use that. Okay, great. Well, I really enjoyed this interview. Thanks so much.
You bet. Have
a story I can use.
Yeah, have a great trip, and we'll see you down here in San Antonio.
Super. Thank you.